from KQED.
And I believe we have Dr. Margaret Hamburg with us now. Dr. Hamburg, good to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. I apologize for being late, but I know that you are learning a lot about important cutting-edge research and new opportunities in science for patients. So I apologize, but I know that your viewers were getting their minds stimulated.
Well, I hope they'll be stimulated by you, too, and I'm sorry that we have so little time with you. I hope we can get you back here maybe for a whole hour, either when you're in town or on another occasion. I wanted to talk with you about a lot of things, and I want to move quickly here, if I may, because there are a lot of important things to cover. I mean, there are 35 new medicines, many of them groundbreaking, that came through the FDA back in 2011, including drugs for melanoma and Hodgkin's, and a lot of really innovative and exciting and pioneering things. I want to ask you initially, though, about Plan B1. This is an emergency contraceptive. It's essentially over-the-counter. It was approved for non-prescription for females under the age of 17. And then Secretary Sebelius kind of put the kibosh on it. What actually happened?
Well, it's an open application still. What happened was that the FDA did its internal review of the application and the data that supported that application. It was a request to move this drug, Plan B one step, from being a prescription drug for ages 17 and younger to being available over the counter, based on the available data. The FDA did find that the science supported the decision to move forward, but the Secretary of Health and Human Services, to whom Congress has given the actual authority for decision-making in these matters, though it's generally delegated to the FDA, based on her review, determined that there wasn't sufficient data to support the younger ages, and so the company was informed that the application wouldn't move forward unless there was additional data provided. So we're waiting to hear back from the company about what steps they would like to take next. They have a number of options. But at the present time, the application is still open. We didn't say no, we're waiting, and we'll work with the company moving forward in whatever way they prefer.
Could I also get you to address some of the criticism that has come down from Senator Grassley about, well, I guess he's launching an investigation of FDA, what he calls secret monitoring of scientists who warned that there were unsafe medical devices approved over their objections. And this is on the heels of a lawsuit that's been filed in district court by six former FDA scientists, some of them current, actually. Grassley is talking about whistleblowers here being treated, as he says, like skunks at a picnic. And I want to get you on record about this whole brouhaha.
Well, this is an ongoing investigation. I'm sorry. I would like to be able to talk in more detail about some of the issues. There's a lot of misinformation, unfortunately, that is out there and circulating. But I want to be clear that this is an issue that is focused on the fact that at the FDA we take very seriously the responsibility to protect commercial confidential information. Also at the FDA, we do follow established guidelines and a legal framework for protecting certain kinds of data from inappropriate use and inappropriate distribution. FDA employees, when they sign on to their computers, are made aware about the possible monitoring of information. They don't have an assurance of privacy on certain types of communications. And so it is a much more complex set of issues. And as I said, there's ongoing litigation here. So obviously I can't speak to the specific details.
I understand. And by the way, if you've just joined us, Margaret Hamburg is with us by line. She's commissioner for the Food and Drug Administration. She's speaking at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco today, Monday the 6th at noon. We did a program recently, Dr. Hamburg, about new research that's come out, a new community or new commentary, I should say, published in the journal Nature. Local UCSF endocrinologist Dr. Robert Lustig arguing that sugar is a toxin, needs to be regulated like alcohol or tobacco. From your perspective, should sugar be taken off the FDA's list of substances known as GRAS, the generally recognized as safe substances?
You know, I think that sugar is one important area of nutrition where I think there's enormous interest in deepening our understanding of the health risks and benefits. It's an area where consumers, you know, want to know more about what's in the food that they're eating, and where the FDA has a critical role to play in terms of both supporting and building on important new research insights, and through our responsibilities for providing accurate information about the content of processed foods. So it's an important area. I think that sugar, along with other critical nutritional issues such as sodium and saturated fats and overall calories, all require strengthening our understanding of the science, really understanding the individual and public health issues, and linking that to what we do at the FDA. But I have had a chance to look quickly at this initial report. I understand the request that is being made. Obviously, we'll look very seriously at any new data that's presented. In the meantime, I think consumers should be aware that nutritional information is provided on the back of processed food packages that enables them to look at the relative contribution of different types of sugar to the foods that they're eating, along with other nutritional components. And it's an opportunity to make more informed choices about the food they eat and the food they serve their families.
Again, we're talking to Dr. Margaret Hamburg, Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. Another food question, if I may, Dr. Hamburg. Seems to be a perception that food safety problems are due mainly to big companies and food from small farmers or producers is safe, and the new law exempts small businesses from some of the federal food safety requirements, although they're subject, I know, to the same state or local laws. But, for example, there were strawberries up in Oregon that were sold only to local roadside stands and farmers' markets and caused E. coli.
Well, of course, you know, microbes don't know whether it's a big farm or a small farm. They don't know if they're being sold within a given state or locality or crossing state boundaries.
But what I'm really asking you, though, forgive me, is whether Congress may or should eventually amend the law to require FDA oversight of food companies regardless of their size.
Well, I think, you know, the critical point is how do we best protect the health of the public? And I think the way to do that is to provide information and strategies to reduce preventable risks for contamination, microbial or other. And there are important lessons to be learned about what kinds of preventive controls can be put in place, whether on a small farm or a big farm, to reduce the points in growth and production and distribution where microbes are most likely to be introduced, and to enhance monitoring and oversight for the products as they go from farm to marketplace. Obviously, we are busy implementing the new Food Safety Modernization Act, an important piece of legislation passed by Congress almost exactly a year ago. It was signed by the president into law just after the first of the year last year. And an important focus of that is trying to develop rules that can really serve as a framework for how to most safely produce fresh fruit and produce, one key area of focus, and what kinds of preventive controls can be put into place in terms of food production, farming, and manufacturing that can reduce risks. And that's the critical role that we play.
You're listening to Forum. We're talking with Dr. Margaret Hamburg. And if you'd like to join us, by the way, you can certainly do that. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or go to our Facebook page. And let's go to Sergio in San Jose, who's joining us. Hi, Sergio.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Doesn't the FDA do more harm than good? The FDA, using our tax dollars, protects us from the bad, but it also protects us from the good. The way I see it, an example would be a dying cancer patient being denied access to a non-FDA-approved drug that might help cure the patient. I would think a variety of private consumer reports would be a more reliable source for the consumer, because it relies upon the consumer's knowledge of a particular private consumer report.
Now, let's ask Dr. Hamburg to address this. It's an important question. Go ahead, please.
Well, I think there's a very important balance between determining what products really work, what are safe, effective products, what products deliver a true benefit to patients in the near term for individuals and also for patients' next generations going forward, and making drugs available for individuals that have serious life-threatening diseases without other options for treatment. I think that's sort of what you're getting at, is that sometimes, unfortunately, for certain disease conditions and certain individuals, they may not have an FDA-approved product available to them. And how can we make sure that those individuals still can have access to potentially important medications that might help alleviate their symptoms and prolong their lives?
And let me thank Sergio for the call. I just want to remind listeners that we are talking to Dr. Margaret Hamburg, the head of the FDA, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. Let me get another caller on for you, Dr. Hamburg, and this is Tamir, who's joining us from Los Altos. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. My name is Tamar.
Tamar, I'm sorry.
I have a daughter with type 1 diabetes, and she uses an insulin pump and often uses a continuous glucose monitor to monitor her blood sugar levels continuously and having to do less blood finger sticks. And the FDA is holding up approval of two devices that could greatly improve her treatment and potentially save her life. One is a new sensor that's being used in many countries throughout the world. I believe it's 40, and another is a pump that will actually shut off insulin delivery if her blood sugar goes below a certain threshold, which could, if not treated, cause death. And the FDA is holding up the approval of these two devices, and it's been years, and they're in use in many countries throughout the world.
Margaret Hammer.
Well, we are, important question, and obviously type 1 diabetes is a very serious disease, and we want to make sure that kids with this diagnosis can have access to, the best available technology, cutting-edge technologies to improve their management and to improve their overall health. We are working hard and working with industry, scientific researchers, and patient groups to really look at some of these important technologies, including the prospect of an artificial pancreas that would really replace mechanically the system in the body that normally controls insulin release and glucose control. And this kind of an approach would make a huge difference in the management of patients and for individuals like the one we're talking about now. But it is important that these kinds of technologic devices, interventions, really work as they're supposed to work, do what they're supposed to do. And there have been issues with some of the products that have gone more quickly to the market turning out not to work as well as hoped. So again, the balance between, really doing the studies necessary to make sure that the products work as they are intended to and provide the benefit to the patients versus moving them out more quickly. But I understand, you know, very much what the caller was speaking to and the frustration that you see a prospect for a technology that could make a difference and you want it as quickly as you can. And we are working hard to streamline our procedures, number one, so that we can move things more swiftly from discovery and the proposal of a good candidate product out into the marketplace for the people that need them. Also so that we can work with our colleagues in other countries to better understand their experiences and get data from the work already being done and to make sure that we are applying the appropriate standards that both help to speed innovations to people, but also really ensure that the products are as safe and effective as possible and really provide clinical benefit to patients.
Dr. Hamburg, we've got only about a minute left, but I wanted to ask you about this attempt of fast-track authorization of the fifth prescription drug user fee set. It would have a big effect on jobs and innovation in California. Where's the FDA on this?
Well, we have been working very hard to negotiate a user fee agreement with industry, not just the pharmaceutical drug industry, but also the generic drug industry and the medical device industry. It's very important as we develop our programs and try to modernize and streamline, as we've been talking about as well, and make sure that we can use the best possible science. We need resources from industry to support our review efforts, as well as the federal government budget that we get for these purposes. And so we have worked very closely with representatives of industry around these negotiations, defining what are the critical issues, how can we strengthen programs, how can we address some of the concerns that we've been hearing about this morning, and how can we establish performance goals so that they can know.
And I hope you'll come back and join us for an hour and have more time with you. Thank you for joining us this morning. That's Margaret Hamburg, Commissioner of the FDA. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Ferro, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.